This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by GoEngineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit the UAVDigest.com/GoEngineer. You're listening to episode 63 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hey, Max, how are you?
Hi, David. I'm great. And we have some great stories this week. One or two really important ones, I think. But we also have some really great listener feedback, some interesting topics to discuss there.
Yeah. So I guess we should talk a little bit about the topics. We've got some coalition building about small UAVs. Our weekly bad guys getting busted by a UAV. A new orbiter has arrived. Unfortunately, it's a UAV, not a shuttle replacement. Kind of disappointed about that. Don't fear the Reaper purchase, the Air Force is arguing with the Department of Defense. New guided systems and a video on the week that's on fire. And of course, like you said, our listeners and their feedback. So I guess we better get started. Well, our first story this week is from gizmag.com as well as General Aviation News. A small UAV coalition formed to promote civil and commercial use of small UAVs. I guess you would want to say, Max, it's sort of in response to, as one listener recently called it in an email, the Magnificent Seven, which are the organizations out in Hollywood that got their COAs from the FAA, huh?
Yeah, this is another group of companies that have launched this small UAV coalition. And what they want to do is they want to help the entry of small UAVs in the United States and abroad, really. They intend to advocate for commercial, consumer, recreational, and philanthropic use of UAVs by, quote, removing unnecessary policy or regulatory hurdles that impede small UAV development, sales, job creation, and services.
Yeah, and when you hear who part of the coalition are, clearly there's a manufacturing bent in this group of organizations. 3DR, Aerialtronics, Airware, Amazon Prime Air, DJI Innovations, Google's Project Wing, GoPro, and Parrot, and they're being led by the attorneys at Aiken, Grump, Strauss, Hauer, and Feld, LLP.
Yeah, it's an interesting group of companies, and they issued a press release sort of announcing this. And we should also mention they have a web page, which is smallUAVcoalition.org. In their press release, the executive director, who is from Aiken Gump, says small unmanned aerial vehicles will yield tremendous benefits to consumers in so many exciting and practical ways. And he says small UAVs can be utilized for stunning aerial photography, surveying and mapping, advances in precision agriculture, consumer delivery, disaster management, journalism, and to monitor flare stacks and gas pipelines. And then we also have this. He says, in addition, the Small UAV Coalition will continue to support safe recreational enjoyment of UAVs for hobbyists and enthusiasts. So that's great. It's not just a kind of commercially focused group. And I guess what we're going to do is we're going to see some advocacy on their part, supporting the industry in general. So I think it's encouraging. I think this is great news. We'll have to see kind of what activity comes out of this because we don't really have anything yet.
And let's face it, there's enough money there to do some advocacy. This is not a group of individuals with not a lot of cash. This is a group of individual corporations that want to get their products out in the market and want to get their services out in the market. It is nice that they're looking after us little hobbyists, but really the main driver is MONEY, and the roadblocks the FAA has put in place. So we'll see. Maybe eventually we might be able to get somebody from the organization on, hint, 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 since I know some of those people do listen to this show. Reach out to us at feedback@theuavdigest.com, and maybe we'll go on from there.
Yeah, and there isn't too much on the their website, smalluavcoalition.org, yet. It's kind of a framework, hopefully, for a lot more to come, but we encourage folks to go there and take a look. One other note from the press release in terms of who they expect to be interacting with. They mention specifically working with the FAA, the FCC, the administration, and Congress. So they've got kind of all those bases covered. And like you say, David, there's some heavy hitters there with some deep pockets. And hopefully they can advocate effectively for all of us. So look forward to that.
So our next story is a little, normally we have people going rogue with UAVs, but in this case, the UAV was a good guy. So a car gets pulled over in Grand Forks, North Dakota, by the police department, and the drunk driving occupants, the reason why the car was pulled over, run off into a cornfield. So what did the police do? No problem. They brought out their AeroVironment Cube quadcopter and then quickly found the children of the corn hiding out there and busted them. So let's hear it for the North Dakota police. And just so you know, folks, they do have FAA approval to use drones at night.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've ever been running from the law, David, but I tell you, a cornfield is a great place to hide and very difficult to find you. And in this case, the cubes that they launched, or the cube, was an effective means of locating at least a couple of the guys who had run from the car. Now, there's some interesting information about the cube, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes. The cube is small. It's sort of specifically designed for first responders, and it's something that fits well in the trunk of a car. It's ready for flight in less than 5 minutes, and it transmits live video back, just what you'd want for a first responder. The article is kind of interesting in that if you read it, and again, the link in the show notes, be sure you read the comments as well, because there's someone quoted in the article from the police department who subsequently adds to the comments section and says that some of the thoughts attributed to him are not exactly true. So if you're going to rely on the data of the article, be sure you read his comments below that.
So let's hear it for the AeroVironment Cube, and Cube is spelled Q-U-B-E. Let's move on from AeroVironment to Aeronautics and unveiled their new Orbiter 3B UAV. They unveiled the Orbiter 3B, offering more range and endurance than the previous model. It's a small UAV system designed for military and homeland security missions, such as over-the-hill reconnaissance, low-intensity conflicts, urban warfare operations, as well as close-range ISR. It's catapult launched from a vehicle, and recovery is by parachute and airbag. The company says it has 10 international customers and one in the U.S.
And this is an Israeli company, David. Isn't that right?
It is.
And one of the features of the Orbiter, they say, is that it has a very low acoustic footprint and a very low visual footprint. It's also got a fairly high data transmission rate that can be encrypted. And interestingly, it can be operated without a GPS. And that would be something of interest if the operation is, as they say, in a GPS-denied environment.
How would we be able to live in a GPS-denied environment?
I don't know, but this is...
What would us mere mortals do in a GPS-denied environment? I wouldn't know where to go.
I think life would stop.
At least traffic would.
Yes, for sure. As we've mentioned in the past, you know, that this is something that's sort of a security concern. The GPS control is something that can be spoofed, and that's supposedly what the Iranians used when they captured the U.S. drone. So I haven't seen too many products that have features that they specifically mention as dealing with that issue. And I guess this one does.
And it's got a surface ceiling of 18,000 feet, which is impressive for a UAV or a small UAV, and has a wingspan of 4.2 meters, which is about 12 feet. So it's a portable UAV. But let's talk about not a really portable UAV, the medium altitude, high endurance MQ-9 Reaper. And evidently the Air Force is arguing with its parent company, the Department of Defense.
This is kind of interesting, and it seems like it's somewhat unusual for an argument between these two groups to take place sort of in this public forum. But we see in militarytimes.com, this is Air Force rebuts Defense Department report on planned Reaper buys. And recently, the U.S. Defense Department Inspector General issued a report that was critical of the Air Force acquisition program for these MQ-9 Reapers. Now, they say that the Air Force wants to spend $76.8 billion to buy 401 Reapers, but the Inspector General says that Air Combat Command didn't obtain the proper approval or perform a verifiable analysis of the number of Reapers that the Air Force wanted to buy. But the Air Force issued a statement on their website, and we'll put a link to this in the show notes, and they really kind of took the Inspector General to task, didn't they, David?
They did, saying that the IG report was based on data that was out of date, unquote. The Air Force now says that they're only buying 346 aircraft, which is 55 fewer than the 401 figure contained in the report, and that we've only received half of that number. The projected total Reaper fleet of 346 is far less than the service had originally estimated prior to sequestration. And then they go on talking about what a wonderful weapon platform the MQ-9 is, and that they really want more of the capabilities. So, and then there was these two quotes. The MQ-9 has played a vital role in combat operations and has resulted in saving American and coalition lives overseas, said the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, Michael Vickers. That capability is in high demand. The MQ-9 Reaper is a success story, said Otto. The soldiers and Marines love it. Combatant commanders want more of it. We're working hard to make more, as directed by the Secretary of Defense. And clearly there's some math involved, but I've never understood Pentagon math. So roll into Pentagon math with sequestration. And yeah, the answer to the question is they might want X, they're going to get Y, and it really will boil down to Z. So that, but it is kind of interesting seeing that the Air Force got very defensive when the IG reported them for overbuying, and I guess in this day and age of sequestration, we have to be careful with what we say. Also, the fact that the Air Force is notorious for not very good at building programs that are cost-effective. I think we'll leave it at that.
Okay, no comment from me on that one.
Too close to. But I need to backtrack on that note. If you're not going to comment on that, I want to know how you know that running into cornfields is an effective way to avoid police.
Oh, definitely no comment on that one. Okay. Moving on to the next story, David. This is from insidegnss.com. UAVs at Intergeo, which is a conference and exhibition in Berlin, Germany. And they had a special session at this Intergeo conference called UAVs in Practice. And they actually gave attendees an opportunity to see some of these systems for aerial surveying and mapping and environmental monitoring and other civil applications. One thing this little article points out is that manufacturers represented at this show were mainly from Germany and other European countries, which I mean, I guess you can sort of expect that to a certain extent, given the fact that this conference was held in Germany. But they made the point of saying that they didn't see much commercial UAVs from the United States, and they kind of attributed that to the regulatory, I don't even know what to call it, situation.
FAA.
That we have in the United States, yeah.
And, of course, this is for geography and mapping and stuff. But there were some couple of announcements. We did have a North American company make an announcement, and that's, I hope I say this right, a Planex Corporation from Canada. And it had a GNSS inertial system that reduces ground control points in SIDELAP, which is the APX-15. So it's an internal guidance system. And SIDELAP means that as you're moving from point to point, you don't deviate from that, I believe, is what I was understanding, but I'm not the engineer of the group. I'm the historian. Care to comment, Max?
Yeah, I think that's what they're saying. SIDELAP refers to the degree of overlap that you need when you're scanning the surface, and that this new system doesn't require so much of that overlap.
Germany-based Abotics GmbH showed their AIBot X6 V2, a hexacopter with navigation by GPS receiver integrated with a gyroscope and accelerometer. Ooh, I said that right. Accelerometer, barometer, magnetometers, and ultrasonic sensors. Well, it sounds like an episode of Star Trek right there.
It does.
And last, the Heuris Mini UAV system from TeamNet International can carry CCD or infrared video cameras, photo cameras, radar detectors, and other sensors. These three new products that we thought were kind of cool, we'll put links in the show notes too.
And it's worth mentioning, David, because of this article, I added another item to our UAS acronym dictionary, which is GNSS, which probably many listeners know stands for Global Navigation Satellite System. So that's in there. And I understand Drone Mama is working on getting that acronym list that we've been putting together, collecting up on a web page on our site. So hopefully we'll be able to announce that soon.
Ooh. Then we can go back and reference it because we start getting letters confused.
It's difficult. I think there's about, I don't know, maybe 30, a collection of about 30 acronyms related to unmanned vehicles at this point, and I'm sure there's many more to come.
The next one is from our friend of our show and guest host over at Airplane Geeks was from Max Trescott. I don't know how to describe this video of the week other than someone flew a DJI Phantom into a volcano and filmed it. And we've seen a poor DJI Phantom drowned, and now they're trying to commit murder with it by fire. But they seem to take a licking and keep on ticking. What did you think of this Icelandic volcano video?
These are spectacular. And we are seeing a couple of videos recently from filming volcanic eruptions. And I remember as a kid seeing sometimes maybe on National Geographic documentaries some close-up of volcanic eruptions. But they were never really very close up for obvious reasons. These videos taken by Phantoms or other UAVs are just absolutely spectacular, and they really illustrate the power and the heat and the energy behind volcanic eruptions. This is really fascinating. I guess I can't get enough of these, David. They're just mesmerizing to watch.
So you can stand the heat, so you need to stay in the kitchen. I got it.
That's right. Yeah. All right, how about on to some feedback?
Boy, do we got a lot of it, so I guess let's get started. The first one was from Eleanor. She's actually producing a documentary in Australia, so this is primarily going out to our Australia listeners, and we know we have a lot of them. There's a gentleman that she'd like to get a hold of called Civic Drones. He's on Facebook, and he's got a YouTube channel, and she'd like to interview him for the documentary she's doing about UAVs and how they assisted firefighters. So if anybody knows him personally, because evidently, Max, you weren't able to get a hold of him either, or knows him down under, could you get us in touch so we can get Eleanor in touch with him?
Sometimes people really want to stay kind of out of the public spotlight or under the radar for a variety of different reasons. And we've seen a number of cases where people have gotten some notoriety because of press reports about what they're doing with UAVs, only to find that that draws unwanted attention. That may be what's happening here. I don't know. Hopefully, David, we'll get to the point in the not too distant future where people don't have to, you know, lay low concerning their UAV activities.
Yeah, well, hopefully we can all come out of the shadows. Not that you and I are in the shadows, considering we have a high-ranked podcast on iTunes about UAVs, and we do know the FAA listens to us, so we're clearly not hiding in the shadows. The next one was from Joel. Love the show. Thought you said in one episode that the FAA may require UAV pilots to keep a flight log. And I believe that you actually reached out to him, Max, and responded.
Yeah, he was. Joel was asking if we could talk a little bit about the requirements. What does it take to maintain a flight log? And what are some good resources that he might use for that information? So the FAA prescribes the requirements for pilot logbooks. It's in 14 CFR 61.51, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. These are obviously directed towards manned aircraft. In my opinion, it's kind of likely that should the FAA institute a similar requirement for unmanned aircraft, and I'm personally pretty sure they will, it's most likely that they'll model that after what they have now for manned aircraft. So it's worth looking at the manned aircraft requirements. We'll also put some links in the show notes to some other resources. AOPA's got a page about going electronic with logbooks. There's a few products that are out there. There's also some information on the Pilots of America forum on this topic. So with all that, I think you'll be able to look at what are the requirements that the FAA has now for pilot logbooks, and just kind of, you know, think about which data items in there are sort of relevant to flying UAVs. And the suggestion is that you start recording, make your own logbook or obtain one of the electronic logbook formats. Some of them are out there that are free. Some of them are commercial products that you have to pay for. But if you're flying now, I think it's a good idea to start recording your hours, because it might come in handy depending on how the FAA chooses to regulate these in the future, in the not too distant future.
Agreed. And while we don't know specs, I mean, you can start logging things. A simple logbook for anyone who's flown: the date you flew, the time you flew, what was it you flew, what was the weather like, what were the conditions like? How long did you fly for, you know? So even if there's you don't have access yet to a formal logbook, you can set up an Excel spreadsheet with those and just every time you fly. And then eventually you could always roll that in. I mean, I know quite a few people who have spent days and months updating their logbook, because they were keeping quick notes, but they weren't keeping complete notes. So, like I said, what we recommend, Joel, is while we don't have a definite answer for you, we definitely want you to start doing something. So, and the best thing to do is just keep it simple to start off with, and then what you'll discover is there's some other information that you might want to include, you know.
Right.
And basically you're going to use it to jog your memory once the FAA now, that might be centuries from now, but
I hope not.
So moving on, Chris, not exactly UAVs, but I found this really interesting, as I'm sure it can directly correlate to advances in UAV UAS technology. I'm also curious how else this can relate to the field. This was from Gizmodo. Watch the Navy's new unmanned swarm boats in action.
Yeah, swarm boats. These things are outfitted with sensors and software, according to this article in Gizmodo, so that the Navy can control them without putting anyone inside of them. And they have algorithms that they use to manage the course and speed. And I do agree with Chris that logic that controls swarms, in this case boats, of objects is something that could have applicability to aerial vehicles as well. So interesting concept, interesting article. I don't know if there's any direct cross-fertilization going on between boats and aircraft in this regard, but if not, seems like there could be.
Well, I was playing with thoughts in my head. Say you have somebody who is a sniper and you want to remotely get them without endangering your own people, you send a swarm of small little UAVs to go buzz them like a swarm of bees to distract them. So that might be an interesting use.
Yeah, and that's how the Navy, I think, intends to utilize these swarm boats as well, that if there's some unknown craft coming up or some enemy, that you can launch these things to go out and surround them or to represent a deterrent.
Well, okay, moving on. This is from Mark. Mark is one of our avid email writers. Drones in the magical age of aviation. And this was from Virgin.com. A interesting article. We'll put links in the show notes of Virgin Unite, which is a nonprofit foundation of Virgin. We know that they like doing lots of charity work. So it talks about using drones for good. So another video. You guys got a lot of videos to watch this week. Sorry. For an audio podcast, we're directing you to YouTube a lot.
And this is a great little article. I mean, as you say, David, it sort of focuses on good use of drones, tries to make the case for all the things that we all know about that represent great applications for unmanned aerial vehicles. So from that standpoint, it's not something that will, change our perceptions. But it's an article that may be useful to pass on to others who maybe only have a critical view of what drones are all about. And this is something that kind of sort of lays out all of many of the good uses for drones. So great for Virgin Unite to produce that.
So I guess we'll call this one done. A bit of a relaxing episode. You guys get a few minutes of your life back. But don't worry, we're going to use it up on a later date. So, Max, where can people find us?
Well, you can find us at theuavdigest.com, and you've been listening to episode 63. So if you'd like to go straight to the show notes, you can visit theuavdigest.com/63. We've got a lot of show notes there, links to the articles, links to the manufacturers, a wide variety of resources that may be useful, and we hope these help you. So that's the UAVDigest.com. And we're also on Twitter at UAVDigest and Facebook as well, also UAVDigest.
And of course, if you want to email us, the email address is feedback@theuavdigest.com. Or if you want to send it to Max or me, it's either David or Max at theuavdigest.com. Don't forget that it's important that we get positive feedback on our iTunes and Stitcher accounts. So if you stream us to your phone, let us know. Or if you're on iTunes, leave us a review. That way other people can find us. The more positive reviews we have, the better we are in the search engines when it comes to iTunes. And last but not least, we've got our swag. You can get a t-shirt or a bag or an iPhone case from our Cafe Press store, which is cafepress.com/theuavdigest. And of course, if you want to help Max and I incur some of our costs, and we like to thank all of our current patrons as well as our sponsors, you can go to patreon.com/theuavdigest or go to theuavdigest.com and click on the donate button. And of course, we thank everybody who does it as well as our two sponsors.
That's right. We'd especially like to thank Go Engineer and UAV Propulsion Tech. So I guess that's a wrap for this episode, David.
Well, I think so. So I'll sign off with, this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
This episode has been sponsored by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com.